Hello to you wherever you are. I'm Nicholas Niarchos and I'm a writer. Lithium-ion batteries are one of the key ways we store power these days. Think about your cell phone, your laptop, your Ouri ring. Most of your devices use these batteries. But where are the materials from and how do they get to be in your phone? My new book, The Elements of Power, is an investigation into new forms of power that have come to dominate our world. Think about it. The 20th century was dominated by struggles for oil. The 21st is being defined by a scramble for critical minerals. Minerals like lithium, cobalt, nickel, and rare earths. The Elements of Power is based on 6 years of reporting, hundreds of interviews, and fieldwork in 16 countries. The book investigates the global supply chain behind lithium-ion batteries and the immense human, environmental, and geopolitical costs embedded in our transition to electrification and our lust for portable electronic devices. If you're listening to this on your phone or on your laptop, you're probably using one of the minerals that I'm talking about, and demand is only increasing. My book moves from Congolese mines to the boardrooms of multinational companies across Africa, China, and the West, to the labs and factories where the miraculous products of modern technology are fashioned. Here are five big ideas that I drew from my reporting. Number one, we often don't know where our devices come from. Supply chains for electronics are deliberately opaque. Did you know that part of the battery in your phone was made in the Democratic Republic of the Congo? Congo is the world's main source of cobalt, a metal used in the cathode or positive electrode of most lithium-ion batteries. Some 70% of the world's supply is in the country, and that means that Congo is central to this lithium-ion battery revolution. But despite the extraordinary mineral wealth in their soil, most Congolese remain deeply impoverished and marginalized. Corruption, exploitation, and violence persist at every level, from artisanal miners and children working in dangerous conditions to systemic looting by political and economic elites, Congolese and foreign. The people who dig up the resources that power the global economy are often those who benefit least from their extraction, continuing centuries of extractive, often colonial patterns. Number two, green tech can be incredibly dirty. Corporate and consumer narratives about clean technology rarely confront the deeply dirty supply chains that underpin green energy's rise. To wit, the global shift toward green energy, electrification, and clean technology has not eliminated the social and ecological abuses that have been traditionally associated with fossil fuels. Instead, these abuses have been displaced and reconfigured. Pollution is moved from big cities to mining sites. In Indonesia, coal power plants pump fumes into the sky and toxic sludge into the seas. In Congo, mines are notorious for child labor, hazardous conditions, displacement of communities, and environmental contamination. The transition from fossil fuels to batteries does not absolve society of the moral and political questions of extraction. Green technology still depends on resources drawn from communities that rarely see equitable benefit and that endure the burdens of mining. We must respect the perspectives, rights, and well-being of those living atop these resources. Environmental responsibility, just investment, and real supply chain reform cannot be achieved by technical fixes alone. What's more, supply chain transparency is often manipulated. Audits and certifications are often limited in scope, while corporate pledges like Apple's to halt sourcing certain materials from Congo do not resolve the underlying economic or political structures that enable abuses. Chinese, Western, and local actors alike exploit intricacies and loopholes to maximize profit, evade accountability, and maintain an appearance of moral responsibility. Number three. Batteries and green tech have created a new scramble for resources in Africa and elsewhere. The rush for critical minerals is fueling geostrategic shifts and shaping conflicts around the world. Lithium-ion batteries are the technology underlying the modern world, from smartphones to electric vehicles, and they have precipitated a scramble for the resources required to manufacture them. This supply chain is the site of complex rivalries, particularly between the US and China. Since the Cold War, the US has gradually retreated from the world, and there are now fewer US and European companies operating in sites that critical resources come from. China, on the other hand, has achieved near complete dominance over battery manufacturing and the extraction and refining of critical minerals like cobalt and lithium. Control of these resources in our world increasingly determines not only corporate fortunes, but also state power and leverage in geopolitics. Number four, the US and big tech needs China. China is an adversary and competitor to the United States and Europe. But the more I researched the battery supply chain, the more I realized how batteries fit into and explicated a global system. China provides a smokescreen for big tech, a black hole from which products emerge. But without China, batteries would be much, much more expensive. So companies have taken advantage of the company's cheap manufacturing for years. Chinese companies have only been kept out by tariffs and protectionism. Elon Musk has said that companies like the EV manufacturer BYD would demolish rivals without trade barriers. Now, as the world tries to move away from China, are we going to have to accept higher prices for batteries? Or will Chinese products produced by Chinese companies finally take over? Number five. There is hope. It's not all a scramble to eke profits from a dying world. In the town of Bunkeya, I watched the yearly commemoration of the local king's coronation. Century-old muskets were fired in the air by an honor guard, and the king received gifts on a golden throne. Outside the royal compound, farms were thriving, roads were paved, and business was good. Most communities in Congo can't say the same. But in Bunkeya, the king has managed to recapture mining revenues and has actually invested them into his community, showing the benefit that minerals can bring if their revenues are managed correctly. In other places, including in the US, I saw how cleaner mining could be carried out, with less emissions and no toxic spills. The new rush for power might be a cynical land grab, but it's also flush with opportunities. With more global awareness around the topic, it could create real impetus towards cleaner extractive policies that give back to communities. Of course, there's a long way to go, a very long way. But as more people get interested, as you get interested, that way becomes a little bit shorter.